1 week ago, Oak Ridge native and composer Ellen Reed was awarded the Pulitzer Prize in Music for her debut opera, Prism. The Pulitzer jury described the winning piece as a bold new operatic work that uses sophisticated vocal writing and striking instrumental timbres to confront difficult subject matter, the effects of sexual and emotional abuse. The work was commissioned and co-produced by Beth Morrison Projects and premiered on November 29th at the Los Angeles Opera's Off Grand Series. I'm speaking on the phone with Pulitzer Prize-winning composer and Oak Ridge native Ellen Reed. Ellen, congratulations on this prestigious award.
Thank you. It's wild for me to hear you call me that.
Tell me about that moment when you found out that you had won.
It's actually pretty funny. I was having a super mundane conversation with my boyfriend about what we were going to have for dinner, and we were making lunch of, like, kind of crappy leftovers, and my phone alarm started going off, so I went to turn it off, and I had all these text messages that said, like, congrats, congrats on winning the Pulitzer, congrats, and it's hard to explain, but I almost felt like something was, like, really wrong, like something bad had happened. I was like, what is happening? This is really weird. And I called my mom and I was like, Mom, I think I won the Pulitzer. And then my boyfriend and I looked it up online and I was like, oh my God. And then I started screaming and my neighbor thought someone had died.
Oh man, that's fantastic.
I mean, you can imagine like following the award of someone like Kendrick Lamar, who reaches millions of people with his work and is like absolutely so relevant, it's unimaginable to me. So that's how I feel.
Did you have any idea that you were being nominated or considered?
Yeah, I mean, being nominated is not a big deal. Anybody could nominate themselves. If you write a piece that's performed, you can nominate yourself and it costs $70. So it's actually a really open process. You don't have to get vetted or anything. And so I knew that Beth Morrison, the producer of this project, had nominated the work, but there's no checkpoints on the way. You don't know if you're on the short list or anything like that. So obviously still like it's not real.
Well, let's talk about your piece that won the award, your opera Prism. The subject matter is about sexual assault. It's an extremely difficult and often personal subject to approach. I'm curious, what made you want to tackle this subject, and were you ever afraid to compose an opera about it?
Absolutely. When we started working on this piece, it was before the Me Too movement. It was before a lot of stories that had come out, and the conversation around sexual assault and the openness about it and kind of everyone's understanding of it wasn't at the level where it is right now. And so I felt like I watched kind of the background behind the piece shift, and it went from being a piece that would be about a woman's story to a piece that was about people and about survival and about these kind of more mythic human experiences. And that was really exciting for me. And I wasn't sure when we showed it what the response would be. I was getting emails from people saying, I experienced emotions I've never felt before. I think to me, that's the highest form of praise I could have gotten from anyone. And so I'm just so thrilled that the piece could speak and that people were open to hear it, and that something about the piece allowed the audience to kind of descend into this experience but still feel vulnerable enough to have emotions around it.
Mm-hmm. And so what was your intention with creating the piece? What do you hope audience members will walk away thinking or feeling?
I think music has the ability to bring us closer to understanding lives that aren't our own. And I think that through telling the story, it allows people to deeper understand the effects of something like a sexual assault and the way that it can fracture your thinking and your experience of time and these things that are really hard to describe with words. I think I was curious to make them more visceral and more tactile through making this piece of opera and this piece of theater where you're watching it. And all the collaborators were a huge part in telling the story. You know, our director, James Dare, Roxy Perkins, obviously, who wrote the story, you know, Beth Morrison, who produced it, we all kind of came together to make the space where it could be heard.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the librettist, Roxy Perkins, how did the two of you meet? And tell me about the process that the two of you took to write this piece.
We met through James Dare, who was the director of Prism, and he met Roxy at UCLA. He read one of her plays. She's a playwright normally. And he was like, oh my God, you need to work with Roxy Perkins. And so he connected us, and Roxy's language has this real immediacy and grittiness that I really liked, that it felt like a lot to play with. And it's just so clear that it almost felt like the choices for writing the music to her language were very limited in a great way, where it's like, oh, it has to be this right mm-hmm. here, you know? And we went through a long process to make this work. As you can imagine, it's challenging to sit with this material and challenging to write it in a way where audiences can hear it. So it was a multi-year process, but it wasn't like it was the only thing we were doing during that time.
I understand that in addition to the two main characters, the mother and daughter, there's also a chorus. What role does the chorus play?
In the different acts, the chorus plays slightly different roles, but usually they're a refraction of the daughter's mind. And it's either parts of herself that she's not connected to, or kind of her inner thinking,
mm-hmm.
kind of the voices we all hear in her head.
Mm-hmm. And so what is the instrumentation of the orchestra, and how does the music reflect this intense subject matter?
It's for a small chamber orchestra with strings, a harp, piano, percussion, some winds, some brass. Each act is reflected differently. So in act one, you have really lush, kind of romantic or impressionistic feeling music that feels like an opera. And we wanted to bring the audience into this world that felt more expected. So when we pulled the rug out from under them in Act Two, when they walk in, and instead of this magical scene, they're in a club where there's this big beat, there's a pop song, there's intense static, that it felt more jarring than if we started the piece there. Second act, we use static and a lot of extended techniques on the instruments to kind of bring out these roars of anxiety or kind of moments of disbelief that the character is passing through on their way to discovery. And in the third act, we use the instruments kind of at the limit of their possibility, using extended techniques and kind of pulling sounds from the ensemble that are really unusual. Because at that point, the characters are so beaten down that using the instruments in a full way felt not true to the story.
Are you using a lot of electronic effects?
We amplified the instruments. So it's almost like a film score in the first section. And in the second section, when we're in the club, we run the instruments through a distortion pedal and through different things that give it almost the sound of a synthesizer.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like we were laying down an electronic track throughout. Mm-hmm. We were using amplification, we were using effects. And in the club scene, there is a drum pad that triggers more club sounding drums than what you can get from a drum kit.
Let's talk about your path to becoming a composer. You grew up in Oak Ridge. Did you play music while growing up?
Yeah, I did. I played piano when I was a kid. I started playing when I was 3. I was really obsessed with piano, but I was never that good. And I sang in church choir at First United Methodist Church in Oak Ridge, and we had a really robust choir program with hundreds of kids, and it was really both a social outlet and a creative outlet. It's really rewarding. And I played percussion in the band. And again, was never really all that good at any of it.
Who was your band teacher at that time?
There were different band teachers.
Mm.
In elementary school, it was Dale Penley, who was a total dear. And Tom Wade was our high school band teacher. And Mr. Yost worked a lot with the percussion.
Did you have any influential teachers who then encouraged you to pursue a path in music? Or is that just something that you decided to explore on your own?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there are so many influential teachers. There are a few that really stand out beyond the teachers I had growing up in East Tennessee who were like super, super supportive. One also that I should list is Katie Wolf, who's an incredible vocalist in Knoxville. And she's remained a really close friend and was a great mentor to me when I was in high school. When I went to Columbia, I was planning on doing musicology, and I was studying with this incredible musicologist and composer named George Lewis, and he was so open to working with me and just such a generous mentor. And I didn't start writing music until I was in college, and it didn't sound like any of the music I heard happening around me, which sounded much more academic than what I was doing. So I wasn't showing it to any of my teachers. And George Lewis heard something I wrote and told me it was the best thing he had heard from any undergrad or grad student, and that I should really think about that. And for me, I had been writing music for about 1 year at that point. And to hear something like that from someone who I respected so deeply, who had carved a career for himself in music, just like, I left and I started crying. I was so overwhelmed. I was like, what? I never thought that this could be a possibility. And I kind of said, like, well, all right, let's just try it. And so I just kind of started barreling down this path, and I had a lot of great opportunities because I was going to school in New York. And then also in grad school at CalArts, I wasn't sure what type of music I would be pursuing. I was interested, and still am, in film scores and making installations. I just love music, and so I don't ever want to limit it and just do one type. And the dean of the music school there, named David Rosenboom, was super supportive. He heard something that I wrote and said, why don't you study with me? And to have him again say, I see you, I hear what you're doing, and I think it's worth listening to, was a huge boost. And from my experience, I think it's really important for any teacher or mentor, like, anytime people get some kind of support, it makes their work better. You know, that there's a way to encourage people to be creative and to keep growing through positivity. And I experienced that through these two professors.
I understand that you spent some time in Thailand as well. I'm curious how that shaped your musical development.
It was a hugely influential experience. I went right after undergrad in New York. I wanted to go somewhere. I think I was missing the Tennessee Green Hills, and I wanted to go somewhere that was just not anywhere I had been. And I got offered a job teaching rock music in Thailand, and I worked with these wild middle school boys on playing rock music for a year, and it was so fun. And I got to learn about Thai folk music and Thai drumming. And it's really interesting, in the West we draw all these boxes around what art is and what type of art is. It's like, oh my God, is this opera or is this dance? Is this pop or is this classical? You know, people get really caught up in these conversations, and there are forums held about it. Like, can it still be an opera if it's amplified? Mm-hmm. You know, like, questions like that, people get really caught up on it. And so it's so refreshing to be in an environment where the rules are just different. And there's a huge storytelling tradition, a huge operatic tradition that is older than the bel canto tradition that we're tracing here, usually in America, that operates by totally different rules, where it's both dance and opera. Or this drum I was learning, you actually hit it with parts of your body, so there's choreography that goes along with the music making. And I loved this blur between the rules that I had learned around what art could be that really got shattered when I was in Thailand. Mm-hmm. And then the second year I was there, I was working at a theater in Bangkok with Thai classical musicians. And it's a totally different way of thinking about composition, totally different way of thinking about making music. And it really expanded everything about what I was doing. It expanded everything from, like, how do you create a musical phrase to what is an opera. And from that experience is how I got more interested in opera, because of theater was doing these Thai and Western fusion operatic pieces that were unlike anything I had seen before. And it was so exciting to be at the center of this, working in this ancient medium in a new way.
And so this fusion style, would you say that describes your compositional style?
I don't know. I mean, if you mean like Thai Western fusion, no. But I think if you listen to Prism, people have described it as polystylistic. And I draw influences from all different types of music. So I think you hear everything from pop to impressionistic composers to noise music in what I'm writing. It's not my intention to bring it together, but it's just kind of what happens, because to me it's reflecting the world around us, and that's what art should be doing.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what you're currently doing. You are artist in residence with the Los Angeles Chamber Orchestra.
That is true. Very exciting. They're awesome.
Yeah. What does that entail?
It's a three-year appointment, and so it entails working with them to bring in some new composers for one of their commissioning programs called Sound Investment. So it's really exciting to be able to advocate for people in the field who I believe in. And it also entails some compositions that we're working out the details of what that could be, and that's really exciting. The performers in LACO are just awesome. So getting to work with them on a more regular basis is just great.
And I understand that you have a commission next year from the New York Philharmonic?
I do. Isn't that wild? I'm on a program with Renee Fleming singing Bjork and Bruckner. So I'm so excited. I'm a huge Bjork person. I'm obsessed with her. I have a huge picture of her on my wall. So I couldn't be happier than to be on a program with anything Bjork related.
That is awesome indeed. And what else do you have lined up for the future?
Well, I have a lot of dreams that are lined up that I'm hoping this award can help make into a reality. You know, I love writing operas and I love writing classical music, and it's been really rewarding, but I'm also interested in working with artists outside of the classical genre. I'm hoping that I can connect with some of those artists who have inspired me and who influenced my work. You know, Kendrick Lamar, are you kidding me? He's amazing and a huge inspiration. You know, someone like Joanna Newsom or Stefan Stevens or Drake, I think it would be so much fun to explore all of these connections between what we're doing. I'm a collaborator, and I would love to collaborate with people outside of classical music, as well as to continue to work in classical music. And I would love to do more film scoring. I think it's such a great avenue for musical expression, and I love musical storytelling. And so it feels really related to opera for me, actually. It's just a little bit less wordy than what we'd be doing in opera. And so I love Miyazaki films, like working with them or with Jordan Peele or Tom Moore, the incredible animator, are all dreams that I just have had. And who knows what will be possible and what will happen, but I just feel so beyond, I don't even know where I am right now. And so anything can happen. And also, I run this young female composer mentorship program called Luna Composition Lab. Mm-hmm. And it gives me so much joy that our program will get more attention. And it feels so important right now to be doing a program like that for all the young female and non-gender identifying composers that we work with. I am so excited for their future and what we can all do together.
Well, I'm excited to see what's in store for you, for sure.
Great. Call me when you know.
And last but not least, what are some of your favorite things to do or see or perhaps eat when you come back home to visit?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, my parents have a lake house, and that is just the best thing. It's so beautiful. It's in Kingston, and we water ski. It's so much fun. And I have two brothers. We love to do that together. That is one of the great memories of my childhood and something that we've continued to do. So I can't wait to be there for July 4th, if not before, and doing that. So I think, hands down, that's the main number one thing. And everybody loves their mom's cooking. So.
True. Pulitzer Prize winning composer and Oak Ridge native Ellen Reed, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me. And again, a huge congratulations from all of us here in East Tennessee.
Thank you.